This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. What's the posture of your heart before God? In the beginning of the book of Romans, Paul outlines a few different postures of an unsaved heart. Today, Pastor Sam Horn will begin to dig deeper into one of these postures in a sermon titled, Do I Have a Pagan Heart? Unpacking what a pagan heart looks like and how they react to God's ways. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
We need to examine ourselves. Paul said to the Corinthians, we need to examine ourselves to see whether or not we actually are in the faith. And that's one of the major functions of this section in Romans. How do I assure myself that I have actually turned from darkness to the light? How do I assure myself that I have become, in fact, a new creation with a new heart? How do I assure myself that the Spirit of God is actually at work in my life? If you get around people, particularly people who grew up in church, here is the number one thing they're going to struggle with. I'm not saying it's the number one sin they struggle with, but it's the number one issue. For years and years, I did a program, Beth and I did a program called CIT at a Christian camp, and in that camp, we dealt with juniors and seniors in high school, and it was 2 weeks, and we had a wonderful time together over the years with many of those young people, and part of that program involved some life coaching, and we would meet with every single camper at least twice, and we would just talk. And, you know, many of those young people, I think if I had to identify the number one struggle they had was the struggle of, am I really saved? Have I been really born again? And many, many, many believers go through life struggling with the assurance that they have actually been born again. And so passages like the ones we're going to look at over the next 6 weeks are extremely valuable because they help us to do accurate diagnoses of what's really happening in our heart. And so as you go through these sections of Romans that we're going to be looking at, Paul is going to describe five different heart conditions, and I'm going to frame them up as a question we need to be asking. So for example, do I have a pagan heart? He's going to talk about what a pagan heart actually is and what it does and how it thinks and how it responds to life in chapter 1, verses 18 through 32. And we're going to find out that at the end of the day, a pagan heart is rooted in idolatry and it is expressed in immorality. We're going to see that really, really clearly. And so anytime as a Christian we turn to something other than God to find satisfaction or to find help, or anytime we begin to tolerate immorality in our life, we are starting to see symptoms of what a pagan heart is like, and it's starting to infect our new man. And Paul says you got to put that off. So chapter 1, we're going to need to ask ourselves, do I have a pagan heart? In chapter 2, verses 1 through 11, we're going to have to ask ourselves an even harder question. Do I have a presumptuous heart? Because in chapter 2, Paul starts talking to people who agree with everything he said in chapter 1. In fact, they are super pumped that Paul has finally taken it to the Gentiles. And Paul says to them, now what about you? Do you think you're going to escape the wrath of God? And the answer is, well, of course, we're going to escape the wrath of God. We're Jews. We're his people. We have the Torah. We have circumcision. And Paul goes after the presumption of their heart. And we're going to have to ask ourselves, when we get to that section, some really hard questions about presumptions we might have about our own relationship to God. And it gets even worse, because he's going to take those people to the next level, and he's going to talk about a hypocritical heart, and we're going to have to ask ourselves, are we guilty like they were of hypocrisy? Paul's going to say to them, do you hear yourself talk? You are doing the exact same sins that the people in chapter 1 are doing. You just put a bunch of religious garments over them.
You steal like they steal. You're as immoral as they are. You're as idolatrous as they are. Your object of idolatry is different. The way you steal is different. The way you're immoral is different. But the root sins that go on in their lives are going on in your life. And God is not partial. That is going to be really uncomfortable for us. It was uncomfortable for me. It is uncomfortable for me even as I've been working my way through this text. And then there's a defiant heart that Paul talks about, and he goes head on in chapter 3, verses 1 through 8, because what you find out here is these people now react to Paul, and they say to Paul, Paul, let me just talk to you straight up. We have the covenant, we have the law, we have circumcision, and by the way, God ought to be thanking us for sinning. Because he told Moses that he was a God of mercy, and he loved to show mercy, and we're giving him the perfect opportunity to show mercy in the eyes of the Gentiles by sinning. Who better to sin than us, and who better to show mercy than God? And so we're actually doing God a favor when we sin, and he ought to be thanking us instead of judging us. And Paul says to them, your condemnation is just when you think that way. And then he's going to come to the whole point, and the idea here is human depravity. We are depraved, whether we're religious Jews or pagan idolaters. We have a depraved heart, and no one is seeking God, and everyone is refusing to fear, to worship God. And you can see that in chapter 3, verses 9 through 20. And we're going to have to ask some hard questions about ourselves if we're really going to do a diagnosis. It's like when you go to the doctor and you want, you know, to check out your heart, and he wants to know what you've been eating. What kind of food have you been eating? Well, broccoli. You know, you might have had one little piece of broccoli 6 months ago, but you remember that at the doctor's office. Oh, and celery. I had a celery stick. You don't tell them that you had 8 pieces of pizza with that celery stick, right? There's things you say, and there's things you don't say to your doctor, but you're never going to get a good picture unless your wife goes with you. And then she tells everything. Not saying I know that from experience, but when your wife goes to the doctor with you, you have lost your cover. Everything comes out. It's like, actually, it was 2 liters of Diet Coke that you drank, and that wasn't just one cup. I mean, your doctor's like, oh! And you know, it's like, can you just be quiet, dear? We're going to want to do this from time to time, because Paul gets really personal. He gets very, very uncomfortable. But the hope is this: there is a new heart available, and that new heart belongs to us if we've experienced what Paul is going to talk about in chapter 3, verses 21 through the end of the chapter. And so the question is, how does God fix hearts like this? And there's 2 problems with the human heart in this whole section. You can take this whole section and you could boil it down to 2 problems. The human heart is dark because of its idolatry, and the human heart is hard because of its impenitence. And so I want to know, at the end of all of this, how does God deal and how does he pierce through the darkness of an idol worshiper's heart, and how does he pierce through the hardness of an impenitent person's heart? And God does that. He pierces the darkness of an idolatrous heart like Abraham's. In chapter 4, we're going to meet a man who was an idolater. He was a pagan idolater. He was thoroughly immersed in idolatry in the land of Ur, in the city of Ur. And he was thoroughly given to that. And one day, the light of God pierced into his heart and moved away the darkness. And God said, Abraham, follow me. And Abraham spent the rest of his life following God. And the writer of the Old Testament and the writers of the New, and Paul himself in chapter 4 is going to say, and God counted that righteous, that faith, that obedient faith as righteousness to him. And then God has the ability not just to pierce the darkness of an idolatrous heart, he can actually pierce the hardness of an impenitent heart like David's.
You remember David's sin? David describes that year of impenitence as one of the most miserable times in his life. Every time he would go to worship, he was reminded of his impenitence. And he said it was like my bones shriveled up. It was like everything dried up inside me. I was without strength. I was without life. And I was without hope. And one day, God sent light into that hardness through a prophet named Nathan, who put his arm around David and said, David, let me tell you a little story. And then let me just apply it. You're the man. You're the one who did this. And somehow the light of that word pierced right into the hardness of David's heart, and he melted, and he said, against you, Psalm 51, against you and you only have I sinned, and there was restoration. And so there is great hope that God can pierce through the darkness of an idol worshiper's heart, and he can pierce through the hardness of an impenitent sinner's heart, like he did for Abraham and like he did for David. And that brings us to this. What is the true condition of my heart? I mean, we're going to have to ask that question. Do I have an idolatrous heart? Even as a believer, have I dethroned God in some way? Have I looked to something or someone other than God for ultimate help and ultimate satisfaction? Because what God has given me is not enough. And that happens to us all the time. You know, God hands us something that we would rather not experience, and it's part of his good and perfect and acceptable will for us. And we look at that and we're like, there's got to be another option. And we turn away from the glory of God and the goodness of God and the grace of God, and we look to something else for help. Or maybe we're in a relationship, or maybe we're in a ministry, or maybe we're at a job, and all of a sudden it loses its luster, and it just gets so oppressive, and we say to ourselves, this cannot be how I'm going to spend the rest of my life. And we turn away from the will of God because we want something better, and we're willing to go and look for it ourselves. So do I have an idolatrous heart? Have I taken someone or something and put them in the place of God, because that's where I'm going to get my satisfaction and that's where I'm going to go for help? Do I have an impenitent heart? That's the second question we've got to ask ourselves. The people in chapter 1 had an idolatrous heart. The people in chapter 2 had an impenitent heart, and they began arguing back against God and using all kinds of twisted reasoning to justify why he ought to be happy and content and at least tolerate their sinning. And maybe that's going on in our lives. Maybe we've decided that whatever God told us, we somehow have come to a quiet, uncomfortable peace that it's okay for us to set the moral authority of God aside in some area of our life. And that's why this series, this little summer series on heart health, is so powerful, and it's so uncomfortable, because it's going to get right down to the roots of who we are and where we live. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to ask the question that I've had to ask myself all week. I want you to have to wrestle with a little bit. Do I have a pagan heart? Now remember, I'm not saying you're unsaved. That's not the question. I'm asking, as a new man, as a new person, as a new creation in Christ, have you let old man thinking and old man behavior start to creep back into your life? Do you have a pagan heart? And Paul is going to unfold this in three stages. There are three ways to sort of understand how this happens in a person's life. If you're going to say, what is a pagan heart and how does it unravel? There are three stages. Stage number one is in verses 18 through 20. And what you find here are two things. You find people who are suppressing truth about God, and they are embracing folly. They are embracing something incredibly foolish. As you were listening to Pastor Garrett, those of you who were here last week, he did a phenomenal job helping us understand how we suppress truth, how we spin it, so we don't actually have to sit under it. But in essence, what you find here in verse 18 and going all the way down to verse 23 is this. These people are suppressing truth, and they're holding it down in unrighteousness in two very specific ways. They are refusing to honor him and to give him glory. That's verse 21. And number two, they are refusing to give him thanks and failing to acknowledge his beneficial provision for them. You can see that, can't you, in verse 21? For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Now, interesting, I want to make sure you catch this. The revelation that God gave in this section is a revelation that he gave to them in two places. He gave it to them in creation, and he put it in their conscience. And he says in verse 19 that it is plain to them. And then he says later on, it is clearly understood by them. It has been clearly perceived in verse 20. So the revelation is plain, and the message was received. It is clear to them, and they made a horrible exchange. They refused to acknowledge the glory of God. They refused to acknowledge him as God, and they refused to worship him. They refused to honor him, and then they refused to thank him. And so there were some devastating things that happened to them because of this. Number one, they became futile. They became useless in their thinking. The word for futile there is the word vain. It's what the writer of Ecclesiastes said. Life became vanity. It became worthless. You couldn't quite put it together. No matter how hard you tried, you couldn't put it together because things were broken. Things were missing. When you have a piece of equipment and something damages that equipment and a piece becomes irreparably twisted, no matter how hard you get that machine to try to work, that twisted piece is going to impact and it's going to make it impossible for that machine to function. And here's what happened to their thinking. Because their mind became twisted, it became broken. Their reasoning was not clear. In verse 21, their foolish or their senseless heart. In other words, the way they started thinking made no sense. Their senseless heart was darkened. It was hardened. That's the idea. They became not just broken in their thinking, they became hardened in the way that their thinking led them. And then that all resulted in the third thing. They became morally broken people. They were foolish. The word fool in the Bible, the word foolish is not a mental thing. It's not like they lacked information. It is a moral thing. The fool, in Psalm 14, verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, this is something that is going on in his inner man, and he is an Israelite who has grown up with the law of God, the Torah of God, the history of God's people, and he has said in his heart, no to God. Non-existence of God. He is a morally broken person. Now, the evidence of this is something that happened to them in verse 23. They give up something genuine and glorious for something counterfeit and worthless. I mean, you can see this, right? They exchange the glory of the immortal God for images, for icons. That's the word. For images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. I mean, you start with the immortal God, the creator of everything, and you end with a creeping serpent. And these people, in their broken thinking, gave up this for a creeping thing. And they made an image of the creeping thing, and they bowed down and worshiped the creeping thing, and they looked to the creeping thing that they made in a little image of, and they looked at that little creeping thing for help, and they looked at that creeping thing for satisfaction. And this is how broken it got. It got so broken
that when they got down on their knees in front of that little creeping thing and they began to become convinced that in order to please the creeping thing, they had to sacrifice their babies in fire, they did it. And Paul is explaining to you why this happened. There are two examples of this in the scripture of what happens to people who give up what they shouldn't give up. There is Belshazzar of Babylon in Daniel chapter 5. This young man grew up in Nebuchadnezzar's court. He was Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. He saw what happened to his granddad. Nebuchadnezzar became utterly convinced of the existence of the God of Daniel. He became convinced of the power of the God of Daniel, and then he experienced the grace of the God of Daniel. And he announced it to his whole empire at the end of chapter 4. And there was a young man living in that court who was his grandson. And in chapter 5, on the last day of his life, instead of turning to the God of his granddad for help, he took the vessels of that God that Nebuchadnezzar had become convinced was real, and he used them in an idolatrous feast to gods that were made of wood and of metal and of gold. And he looked to those lifeless gods for help on the last day of his life, and he was brought to ruin. In the New Testament, there is Herod Agrippa I. This is Herod the Great's grandson. Herod, the one that you read about in the days of the birth of Jesus, had a grandson, and he became the ruler of Judea, and he was the ruler when Peter was put into prison. You remember that? And he was released miraculously, and Herod knew everything. He knew about Jesus. He had heard all the stories. He knew about the crucifixion, and now here is Peter, and he's been miraculously released, and instead of humbling himself, Herod turned, and he took the glory of God for himself. He was so angry that he executed all of the people that were associated with that moment in life, and then he had some visitors that he was upset with, and he sat down in front of them and gave a speech to welcome them, and trying to buy favor with him, they said, "Oh, the speech of a god." And the Bible says Herod did not give God glory, and God smote him on the spot. This is where all of this leads. This is why stage one is so important to understand. Now, where does that all lead? Stage two involves devastating degradation. It doesn't stop. It goes down a level. Devastating degradation and divine judgment. And you can see this in verses 23 through 31. You read that there were some human exchanges that were made, and every time human exchanges were made that gave up something about God, God made a decision to give them up. They gave up something, and then he gave them up. Now, don't think for a moment that when God gave them up, he basically stepped back and said, "Okay, you want to go that way? I'm not going to get in front of you. I'm not going to stop it. I'm just going to get out of your way." That's not what God did. The idea of giving them up shows up in verse 24. It shows up again in verse 26, and it shows up in verse 28. This is a judgment. And you've seen it before in the Old Testament, in the book of Judges, six different times when God's people sinned and God's people refused to repent, God handed them over to their enemies. That's the idea here. Everything you're about to read in this section is God delivering people over to what they want, and what they want is actually their enemy. What they want is actually going to destroy them and bring them into bondage. And so what did they give up? Well, they gave up, they exchanged the glory of God for worthless idols.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. If you live locally, come join us for a morning worship service at 9 or 10:45 a.m. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you'd like more information about Palmetto or this sermon series, reach out to radio at pbcpowdersville.org. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time, so together we can grow in grace.